Hi, welcome to the Ally Spotlight, hosted by me, Sarah Ebmash.
And me, Andrew Milne.
We'll be talking to guests about how they're working towards making the world more diverse, equal, and inclusive through allyship. Hi, Vinny. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We're very excited to have you. Before we get started, for the benefit of our listeners, could you just introduce yourself, tell everybody who you are and what you're all about?
Yeah, so my name is Vinny Wellsby. My pronouns are they, them. I am a British-Irish person and I live in Vancouver, Canada, which is the traditional stolen, occupied, ancestral and unceded territory of the Coast Salish people, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh and Musqueam nations. I am a medium-fat person, neurodivergent, white and a dog owner. Oh, and the other thing, what I do for my job, I'm a fat liberationist. I teach individuals and organizations about fat liberation and how to be kind to fat people.
Certainly, like a lot to you there, Vinny. And, you know, you've kind of like self, and I use the word fat activist, but you're a self-proclaimed fat activist according to your bio. What made you click into that? Like what gave you that sort of title, or how did you go to that rather than the neurodivergent title, for example?
Yeah. So the reason why the fat stuff is so important to me is because my personal story is that I had quite a challenging first half of my life. I was lived in poverty and experienced abuse, and I was unhoused at 17 and then experienced more abuse and lots of fun times. But I had this idea that if only I could become thin, I wouldn't experience all that shit and I would have a wonderful life and Brad Pitt would be blowing up my phone asking for dates and I'd be rich and I, you know, all wonderful things would happen if only I could become thin. And so I spent so many years of my life desperately trying to become thin, getting close and then not succeeding. And really felt terrible about myself. And it wasn't until I saw a message on the internet about 10 plus years ago that says, hey, it's okay to be fat. And hey, by the way, it's almost impossible for anyone to lose weight and keep it off. And hey, by the way, you can be fat and healthy. And I was just like, what the fuck? Why has no one shared this message with me before? And I think it's a message that it changed my life, and I want to give that message to other people so that they can stop belittling themselves and berating themselves and telling them themselves that they are a terrible person because they are not a thin, thin, thin supermodel. And I think a lot of people feel like that way. And also wanting to change the way that we as society view and treat fat folks so that we don't have that societal pressure to be in a certain body size.
I mean, you know, and it's not about me, but to make it about me. So I've come from being a fat child as well. So, you know, my story up until the age of about 18, like I think I hit 18 stone at that age. And, you know, it's when you said the what if I was skinny, if I was that, then I would become that. And the harsh reality is that no matter how skinny you are, you're not going to have that happened to you, you know, and why you say that, and in terms of like Brad kept calling you, like there's always going to be something else in your mind that prevents you from taking that step to your own development. And I think a lot of people might place, because I'm fat, this is not happening. But then when you do become skinny, you're going to find something else to pick on as well. Like, do you find exactly that that's your experience too? Like, no matter what you do,
100%.
You're never going to be good enough. That's the harsh reality.
That's it. Even the people with the smallest bodies, they'll say, well, I'm still too big. And
yes,
but my hair is still too short, or my nose is still too, you know, this. And that's because we're playing into beauty ideals where the house wins. We can never win because we're going to get old. We're going to become disabled if we live long enough. Our bodies are going to change. And that's just the way it is.
Mm. No, exactly. And like you said, it's like it's hard. You've got to accept yourself for who you are, self-perceived flaws and all, in order to progress. It's like, you know, when you shouldn't find value in a partner, you should find value in yourself, and then the partner should compliment you. Let's just, you know, get that out of the way. But it's like when you're with someone, you always get worried about, you know, what do they think of me? What is this? You know, why you can't ever settle yourself down. And I think this comes with maturity, and I, you know, I can say this as a 40-year-old man, which is not even that old, is that self-acceptance is the biggest key to your happiness. And once you learn to be happy in yourself, then so much falls into place. You become more confident. You don't care about the small little things. You can kind of look past all that. And I feel social media is just the bane of the self-acceptance, because, you know, if you start to go down certain algorithms, you then get all this nonsense gym stuff and what have you, you know, health and fitness, and it just becomes quite a horrible cycle to be in. You know, is that kind of what you have learned as well along your journey?
Yeah, oh my goodness. And as well, you know, I obviously lived in the UK for the first part of my life until I was, I don't know, 25. But now, being in Canada, I can see the difference in the way that the UK treats fat people versus in Canada, and the vitriol that the UK media has towards fat people and other people with marginalized identities is overwhelming. And it's like, how can we begin to accept ourselves or treat other people with marginalized identities as humans when we are bombarded with the messages that fat people are, you know, animals and greedy and causing the NHS to lose loads of money and things like that? Like, it's really, really difficult to then turn around and say, but my fat body is okay. It's very, very hard.
Yeah, we had this conversation the other day with another guest about how toxic the media is and how they're curating these hate stories about marginalized people, you know, just very broadly. And it's just awful. And people believe everything they read. And it's the best.
Right. We don't have that same type of media in Canada, like that kind of scuzzy, like, big boob blonde babe and things like, you know, that type of media. We don't have that, but still that type of presentation of people who are not, you know, rich, thin, white, it's still very unkind, but in a polite way.
I have no comment to make there. Mm-hmm. So in terms of fat liberation, is it liberation for yourself against preconceived ideas? Is it liberation more broadly to kind of change perceptions and the media narrative and everything? What's it liberating from, I suppose, is the question.
Yeah, great question. It is general liberation from oppression. And I'll give you some ideas, because some people might be like, well, what do fat people experience that, you know, is difficult or different? Anti-fat bias is exactly what it says on the tin. It's disliking fat people or fatness. And fat people are often, depending on their size, barred from things like accessing IVF treatment, gender-affirming care. You're automatically lower on the organ donation list. We can't donate our bodies to science. Many times in many different locations, we are not allowed to adopt children or foster children. In Ireland, people who have larger fat bodies are unable to buy a house because they're denied mortgage protection insurance. We're unable to immigrate to certain countries like New Zealand. It's absolutely legal in almost everywhere in the world to fire a fat person solely because they are fat. So liberation means that we get access to the world in an equal way that people who have smaller bodies do. And there are many, many, this is just a short list, but there are many instances where fat people are excluded and marginalized. And it's not okay. And so that's what fat liberation means for me, is to say, hey, let's just treat fat people like they're humans, That would be cool.
Oh my God, I had no idea. I guess a massive part of it is, I mean, the education, having these conversations and telling people that this is what's good. I literally had no idea. Everything you just said, my mouth, my jaw was on the floor.
Yeah, no, I just had that Oprah moment, wait, what? You know, the whole meme, I was like, hold on, I didn't... You have to have, can't get insurance. You can't buy, you've got money, but you can't get insurance to buy a house. I mean, that was the most like, wait, what, for me? But then as it continued, I just progressively, my jaw slowly dropped even further. That's quite a large mouth as well. So that's quite an achievement. I didn't realize any of this was quite going on.
Yeah, no. And it seems normal. It's seen as correct, because why would we let people access IVF, and why would we let them adopt and foster? Because they're going to create fat children, and fat people are bad. And so we do not want them to procreate. We do not want them to influence the lives of our innocent children and make them fat and greedy, and then have another generation of terrible fat people. Which obviously all of that is terrible bullshit. But that's the thinking behind it.
Like, I think devil's advocate, you can kind of see elements within it, but it just goes to the extreme where it's just a blanket ban. And then, you know, there's further questions to be had, but that was quite an eye-opener for me there.
Yeah. And if you think about, like, donating your body to science, that's for anyone over 180 to 200 pounds. I don't know what that is in stone. So that is a small person. It's not even a fat person.
Yeah.
And so what does that mean to the way that we study bodies and what we know about bodies? And we already know that most clinical trials are done on thin, white, non-disabled people. And so we don't know about how to treat fat bodies. And fat bodies are automatically assumed to be diseased and unhealthy and bad. And so it's a blanket. Well, if you've got a fat body, just go away. Like, you wouldn't even be able to get an appointment at many IVF clinics. And now, there's a caveat to all that. It's not a no fat person can ever adopt. It's different agencies in different locations and different situations. But this is a common experience for a lot of fat people.
I mean,
I've just Googled it.
Yeah.
And so for all our listeners, the 180 pounds to 200 is 12 and a half to 14 stone, which is...
It's small, right?
So I've got a question. Why aren't more people talking about this?
Because it seems like the right thing to do to hate fat people, because there's the assumption that all fat people are terribly unhealthy and they have caused it. So that people don't see fatness as an identity factor. They see it as in, you know, like being a woman that's unchangeable in many respects. Obviously, I'm trans, non-binary, but, you know, they will say, well, that's an unchangeable feature, or, you know, other identity factors. But they see fatness as a very changeable feature, and it's not. And we've known this for 100 years now that... dieting doesn't work, and that 95%+ of diets fail, but we still cling on to the hope that fatness can be eradicated, and that the idea that fatness is this quote epidemic, the O word epidemic, by the way, the O words are obesity and overweight. We don't like to say them in the fat liberation community because they're seen as slurs. Anyway, the O word epidemic is all just bullshit made up. And a way to demonize fat people, unfortunately. So it seems the sensible thing is to hate fat people, because why would we want to encourage people to be, quote, unhealthy and gluttonous and bad? But that's all stereotypes about fat people.
Yeah, it's easier to ostracize than it is to, and I don't want to use the word cure, but it's easier to ostracize than to understand and help people in that sense, right?
Mm-hmm. And even like the idea of helping fat people, like fatness is just a normal way to have a body. And so we wouldn't want to say that we want to help fat people. It's just, it would be saying like, help fat people survive the world that says that they need help.
By help, I was using it in the holistic point of view, by which I meant support more than anything. Like, it's not out to cure anyone, but good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. And so what would you say that the mistakes you have made through your, you know, your activist journey, what have you done that you could have done better? And what would you take away from them should you have choose to do it all again?
Oh, lordy, lordy. I've been through this whole process of when I first got into activism, I was so angry, obviously, because when you learn about this stuff, you're like, what the fuck? I was so angry, and I got swept up into like, if someone does something wrong, then they need to go away. They are dead to me. And, you know, getting swept up into quote, canceling people, in order to prove what a good person that I was. And I don't know if I would go back and change it, because I feel like it's a learning journey. And I feel a lot of people, when they come to activism, they come because they're spurred on by their own anger, because of what they've experienced. And that's useful. And obviously anger is a helpful emotion. But what I learned was that it was ostracizing people, and it wasn't getting people to come along on the journey with me. And if people were doing the right thing, they were doing it out of fear, because they didn't want someone like me saying, "You're a piece of shit because you said this one thing wrong." So that would be the biggest mistake. And I do something totally different now.
And that sounds pretty much in line with the whole point of this podcast, is that we're not here to point fingers. We're here to provide support, to say what could be done better, and how can you learn from other people to better support them and better understand yourself? Like, what are your motivations? How can you put your guiding light into practice for other people, like uplifting others, basically?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's something that I've learned from Black leaders, is that to get people to come along is to get them to come along with joy and excitement and happiness, not with fear and shame and blame.
Yeah, you want them to be part of the conversation, not be targeted by the conversation, essentially, or feel awkward by it. And, you know, you've mentioned, we've all mentioned the word activist already, but what is an activist to you?
I feel like it's a doing word, right? It's someone who is doing in whatever realm that feels good to them. For me, it's through education, social media, through conversations. Whereas for someone else, it could be that they're doing it a little bit more quietly, and they're not doing it online, and they're having conversations with people around them, or not even talking to people, but doing something else. And so I really feel like it's you're doing something to change the status quo.
So you've experienced what a lot of our guests have been on the same journey. You know, you don't want people coming to the table with fear and coming with the wrong motivations. They need to be part of that, and they need to feel included, and we want them to be allies. How do you take a person who is eager to be an ally and help them to get on the journey, on the right path, and, you know, not use the O word? Help reframe that conversation and be an advocate of what you're trying to achieve.
So I have this idea that almost all people are good people. There's some outliers who are, you know, want to be bad people, but I think most people want to be good. And also most people have the capacity to have their minds changed, and everyone has something that they do care about, whether that's the fact that they have a child who has ADHD, or they have an elderly parent who's going into a care facility or something. There's some way that they are connected to social justice, and they might not realize it. And so connecting it to their own experience and doing it with kindness and putting out how it is harming them is the where I've seen success. So I had this a troll on my TikTok account being like, saying some comment like, "Why don't you just lose weight, go to the gym and eat something?" And so I made a video response saying, "Oh, so here's a really great example of anti-fat bias. And we all have anti-fat bias. And this is how this type of comment might harm everyone, and that this is how this type of comment will harm the person who is leaving the comment." And I couldn't believe it, but that person, who was in my mind very clearly a troll, came back and said, "You're right. I'm sorry about that, and I'm going to change the way that I think or speak about fat people." And I was flabbergasted. I could not believe it. Whereas in the past, I would have just been like, "Fuck you, piece of shit," or whatever, you know, write them off, because clearly they're a troll. But, you know, they're human and they are trying to do their best. And maybe if you're kind and explain to them why it might hurt them to have that attitude, it could change their mind. And obviously, it's not our jobs to do that. But if we have the capacity and we do want to affect change, that might be a tactic that could help.
That's amazing. That's a great story. If you change one, we always say, if you can just change one person, if you change a person's life or change his perception, that's a massive step forward.
I can't believe it, right? When it happens, I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that wasn't so hard. I just went and explained it to you and I was kind and you just said, okay. I was like, oh, all right. This is weird, but cool.
And then what? I don't know where we go from here. I've not done this before. Yeah, like the panic set
in. Yeah, yeah. Want to be friends? Like,
yeah. We'll be acquaintances first, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta pace yourself. Don't give away too much too soon. If acting has taught me anything, leave the audience wanting more. And so what would you say, you know, you're most proud of achieving in your allyship journey?
I was thinking about this and I was thinking, like, is there one big thing? And you know what? I think that's where sometimes I can get overwhelmed or feel like I'm not doing enough when I haven't, like, saved the world yet, you know, when I haven't, you know, changed the world for fat people or whatever group of people. And so I was thinking about, like, what is, like, something to be proud of allyship? And you know what it is? I feel like it's the small little things that you do every single day. It's that social media comment. It's, you know, when my dad was alive, he was openly racist, and it's saying things like, why do you think like that? Or tell me about your perspective. Or, you know, and obviously that's a big thing, but those little things accumulating into one big body of work, which is trying to do good and trying to be an okay person in the world. So I think for me, that's what I'm proud of, is the resilience of doing little things, building up to a big body of allyship work.
No, and that kind of, it resonates, because I went to a talk last year by Munro Bergdorf, and, you know, one of the questions was, you know, when do you stop? When do you know enough's enough? Like, when do you start going, I've done all I can, and now it's time to, you know, let other people, I need to retire from this, like, my activism, you know, I've reached all the people, like, when's enough enough? And, you know, her response was like, I just don't really, you never know. You're like, you just got to keep on going. You got to convert the generation. There's never going to be a time to finish. You kind of, it's just this, I don't want to say an uphill battle, but it's just an ongoing journey that the path may take many meander, but you just got to keep cracking on, and you'll know when you've done what you need to do, and your legacy will speak for itself.
Yeah, you'd have a legacy. Like, how cool would that be? Like, you'll be on the deathbed and they'll be like, Vinny was okay, like, they tried to do good, you know. Andrew was a cool person, you know, versus thank fuck that they're dead now, because they were a right idiot. Like,
B+. He tried his best. B+.
Yeah, I'd be happy with the B+.
Yeah.
Human.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
So what do you say makes for a good ally?
What makes a good ally? I think, you know what? I think kindness, curiosity, empathy, and making mistakes, because making mistakes means that you're trying and that you're not so terrified of being wrong, and also being brave, because the idea of making mistakes is terrifying. So kindness, curiosity, empathy, fucking up, and being brave.
You know what? That, again, it resonates quite well, because I don't know about you, Sarah, but I'm always conscious of saying the wrong thing on here. Like, are we going to get listened to, and someone's going to lambast us for not misinformation, but coming out with the wrong phrasing or whatever?
100%. 100. There is nothing that you can do or I can do where we will be free from fucking up. It's not possible, because we are gorgeous humans and our brains will say things like, you know, like how you said, oh, cure, and I was, or whatever word you said, and I was like, oh, it's not this. And it's just like, we're learning how to communicate effectively. And to learn how to communicate effectively with each other, we make mistakes. And that's just the learning process. But that's the thing, is I've learned to, because I used to be that fear of conflict and that perfectionism, they are both white supremacy culture in action. And so what I've done is try to be like, okay, I think I've done everything to cover my bases, and I'm definitely not trying to fuck up. But when I do fuck up, is to say, okay, what can I do to be better, versus what can I do to defend myself and convince people that I'm a good person? Because it makes it about me and not about my mistake and moving forward. But it's fucking hard, because when someone says you've done something wrong, it's so hard not to be really stressed about it.
Have you got anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners, Vinny?
You know what we didn't speak about, and we can talk about this quite quickly, is a DEI and how DEI in the workplace just totally ignores fat people.
Yes.
So the other side of this is that in the DEI world, which many people are in the workplace, I did a survey, and I asked hundreds of people in the DEI world, have they done or have they conducted training on anti-fat bias? And guess how many people said that they had out of hundreds? What's your guess?
I would say, yeah, less than five.
Zero. And I was like, what? And this is super common. Because fatness is seen as an issue that's not that important, and something that we'll get to later on, or something that people haven't even considered. And the reason why that's a huge issue is that many people live in bigger bodies. And so we're ignoring huge parts of our employee population when we're not talking about anti-fat bias. As well, in the workplace, fat people get hired less, get promoted less, and get paid less, and are put into positions where they're not in client-facing roles less. And so fat people are being harmed at work. And the stories that I hear are unbelievable about the stuff that people experience. So it is so important that we talk about anti-fat bias and fat liberation, because we are really missing a trick with this in the DEI world.
I'm just curious, why do you not use the term fat discrimination? Because a lot of what you're saying, anybody would be saying discrimination.
Yeah. No, I guess it's just the common lingo in the fat lib world is anti-fat bias. And some people say fat phobia, whereas that's being phased out because the disability community said that phobia is not the word that we should be using. So, yeah, it could be fat discrimination, but anti-fat bias, same thing, I guess.
Yeah, fat phobia makes it sound like it's not somebody's fault that they think like that.
That's true. And that's
very misrepresentative.
That's my latest DNI itch, is people using phobia at the end of everything just because of a stance they take. Like, not everything is fat phobia, not everything is, you know, something phobia, and it desensitizes the word. So you kind of how am I trying to phrase this? Basically, it's like the boy who cried wolf, or, you know, Peter, not Peter and the Wolf, because that's quite a good play. And the boy who cried wolf, like, if you keep on calling everything a phobia when it's actually just somebody being a cunt, like, it's not the same thing. You can't, not everything is a phobia. And it desensitizes people from word phobia. And then phobia is going to go the way of the woke, you know, the word woke and that sort of culture by which people aren't going to take you seriously. So I think you need to call it what it is. And it's not a phobia. It's a discrimination. It's an active choice, not unconscious, because phobias are unconscious. You know, you get therapy for phobias, whereas if you're actively discriminating somebody, then that's different.
Yeah, but exactly.
That's just my little DNI itch at the moment.
No, I'm aligned totally on that.
Yeah, cool.
Vinny, thank you so much for your time today. We've loved having you as the guest, and I've learned so much in this very short chat that we've had. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Andrew, you are the best. Thanks for talking about fat stuff with me.